Hey, it's Dan Bova from Entrepreneur Media, and welcome to How Success Happens, the show where I talk to awesome people who do awesome things and ask the simple question, how on earth did you do that? Ready to get informed and inspired? I am too, so let's get to it. How Success Happens starts now. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Lucky for us, there isn't a whole lot going on in the world these days. So today's guest has all the time in the world to sit down and chat and relax. Dana Perino hosts two daily programs on Fox News Channel, America's Newsroom, and The Five. She is a sought-after mentor. She writes incredible leadership books, and her new one, I Wish Someone Had Told Me, is out now. Please welcome the not at all busy Dana Perino.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be reconnected with you.
Yes, great to reconnect with you. And I love the title of your new book. And I have to wonder, is that a reference to wishing someone had told you something the first time you sat down next to Greg Gutfeld 11 years ago and said, you're going to be stuck to this guy?
Yes, more on Greg Gutfeld. Indeed. Actually, one of the things about this new book that I like is this connection to my mom. So the previous book I wrote was specific for young women. This one is not. But the title was Everything Will Be Okay, Life Advice for Young Women from a Former Young Woman. And I sent it to my mom before it came out. She read it. And she called me afterwards and she said, wow, I wish someone had told me these things.
Oh, nice.
And that's a reference to, like, my mom came into the workforce around 1965 after college. And a lot of those women did pave the way for the rest of us. They were pioneers in the workforce. And now there's really nothing that stops women from doing anything, being able to be protected when they're playing sports, not to get political. And I won't, but I could talk about that too. But anyway, so she said, I wish somebody had told me these things. And then we went through COVID. I do a lot of mentoring. I always have since I left the White House. And I realized that there's a lot of things happening. One, the mentees that I've been talking to for years, they've grown up a bit. So now they keep coming back for more advice. It's not, what should I study? How can I get the job? How can I get the promotion? It's, whoa, what do I do now? Now I'm a manager. Now I'm an executive. Now I'm a mom and dad. And maybe even I'm thinking about how to retire. How do I deal with my finances? And it just got to be so big that I knew I needed to do a refreshed, updated mentoring book, but I also knew that I absolutely did not have all the answers. So I did, and I went to all sorts of friends and colleagues, people I've known through my whole life, like my college roommate, even to people like Greg Gutfeld, who is hilarious, but also has terrific and wise advice in the book, and all sorts of people from around Fox News. And it takes about a year or so for a book to come out. And when the final product came and I reopened it, I thought, oh, wow. Pretty good. So I'm happy with the way it turned out.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And what I would love to do before we start to dive more into setting yourself up for success and working on this path that you talk about so great in this book, first, I want to ask you, how do you define success? What does success mean for you personally? You've done so much, so many impressive things over the years, but has your approach to success or your definition of success changed over the years? Are there points you want to hit? Tell us about that.
I certainly think that's true, that I grew up in Wyoming and Colorado, and I don't come from money. I don't come from politics. I did have ambition. I wanted to achieve things. I grew up in a rural area. I never thought I'd live in New York. And I really tried to plan my whole life out. Okay. And I worried away my 20s. And one of my great hopes is for people who would listen to this podcast or if they're willing to read the book is that they would realize that if you are an educated American, you've already won life's great lottery. Okay, so then you get to decide what you want to do with that. And I probably had way too much financial anxiety that was unnecessary. I never missed a bill. I never missed a paycheck. I'm very fortunate that I haven't had a situation where I was laid off for an extended period of time. I've never had to rely on the government. And the government should be there for people that need that, absolutely. So initially, my measure of success was, can I pay my bills? Okay. Then my measure of success was, can I get a promotion? Can I get to this level at a PR firm. And then guess what, Dan? I didn't like working at a PR firm. And I thought I had failed. 9/11 happens. I go back to Washington, D.C., and I stayed at the Justice Department for about 9 months before I went over to the White House in the Bush administration. And I became eventually the White House press secretary. That is the pinnacle of a communications career. And you think, okay, then I don't need to do anything else after that. Not true. Because human ambition and drive continues. And what I think matters to me most now is, can I feel accomplishment along with a continued desire to learn and to be curious, and most importantly, to find serenity? That is how I define success. Can I pay my bills? Yes. Can I help others? Yes. And I'm trying to do that also with this book. Here's all my advice, guys.
Yeah.
I want you to succeed. But for me, success is, am I still learning? Am I growing? And am I not worried about what's going to come next? Can I be confident as an educated American woman married to a guy for 28 years that I met on an airplane, working at a great company? I just think I have to live with a ton of gratitude for what I have. And the more I do that, the more I feel like I have really achieved something. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of like therapy.
Yeah, that's great. I feel I might start crying at some point. But wow, you met on a plane. What was the opening move? Who made the first move? And what did they say?
You have to go back in time to 1997. Okay. I was 25. This guy that I was assigned seats next to on an American Airlines flight going from Denver to Chicago. We were just assigned seats next to each other. I almost missed the flight. It was my first time going to Denver International Airport. And have you ever been in Denver and driven out to the airport?
Yes.
You think you're in the middle of Kansas by the time you get there.
Right,
and so my sister and I completely misjudged how long it was going to take her to drop me off.
Yeah.
My future husband almost took an earlier flight because he'd gotten there so much earlier. And we sit down. Now, we do not have phones. We don't have AirPods or a Walkman even. And we had books. And he asked me if he could put my bag up above for me. And I said, no, because you've met me, Dan. I might look tall here, but I'm just over 5 feet tall. And I don't like to have my bag up above because I like to use it as a footrest because my feet usually don't reach the floor. Okay. That's just what it is. And he had a book. It was The Tailor of Panama by John le Carré. And I said, oh, how do you like the book? And we started talking for 2.5 hours. And I remember looking out the window. He, first of all, also he's British. Accents can help. I get it. But he wasn't wearing a wedding ring. He had just gotten a divorce and he had only recently taken his wedding ring off. And I remember looking out the window. I would never have talked to him if he had a wedding ring in terms of being interested. But we just talked about all sorts of things. He's well-traveled. He's 18 years older than me, super wise. I remember asking him a few things about politics, and the way he answered made me think, okay, we are aligned, which is good. And I remember looking out the window and thinking, all right, Lord, I know I asked you to help me find somebody, but I'm on an airplane. We are about to land. I might not ever see him again. He's a lot older than me. He lives in England. He's been married before. He has children from his first marriage. None of this is going to work. It cannot happen, but I could not stop thinking about him. And we got together, we started talking by phone, letters, old-fashioned. And I went to New Orleans about 6 weeks later, very unlike me. And that was it. 7 months later, I moved to England, and we've been together ever since.
That's incredible. I mean, what an awesome story.
And can I add one thing on that, Dan, which is my very favorite piece of advice in this book, is that choosing to be loved is not a career-limiting decision. It doesn't have to be. Okay, so some of the young people that come in to see me, they'll want advice on getting a promotion or how to get a raise or things like that. But almost all of them, when they leave, they'll say, have any tips on how I can meet someone or how to make a personal connection or a commitment or how do you make your marriage work? And a few of them have had long distance relationships, but they don't want to leave their job. I get that. But I truly believe that it doesn't have to be a career-limiting decision. If you decide that you want to be with this person, your career might change. But I look back and I think when I left Capitol Hill to go and live in England, that didn't ruin my career. In fact, if I look back, so much of what I've accomplished is because I had Peter to help me. And I really just want to stress to people that take the leap, make a commitment. If you can find it, that means you have to leave your house. And maybe have your eyes and ears open.
I mean, that's such great advice for personal stuff and for, as you said, professional stuff. It's so many times we talk to entrepreneurs or people who are successful, and they're always like, you've got to speak with people. You can't do everything from your phone and you're behind your keyboard. It's those personal connections mean more than you could ever imagine. So being open to stuff like that, I think is pretty incredible. Now, I want to be selfish for a minute because I have a son who is graduating college and he is in the midst of sending out resumes, trying to connect with people. And this always comes up, the email subject line. What someone who does not know me, and I'd love to pick their brain or I'd love to work where they work or just learn something from them. What's your advice to my son about making that breakthrough?
That's great. May I ask?
He is studying media and communications.
Okay. And do you know what type, where in the industry
he is really into podcasting, audio work, documentary style. He's also been a writer at Boston Globe for a little while as a freelancer. So he's done a lot of different things.
So I do think that it is very difficult to figure out how to break through. It's true. And most importantly, I think that leaving your house and talking to people is great. I don't know what college he went to, but hopefully they have some sort of career day or alumni associations. Alumni associations are actually underutilized, I think, for this kind of networking, because one of the great joys of my life is helping younger people. And I'm not the only one. People love it. Even Greg Gutfeld loves it. We had a young woman here the other day. She's an intern here and she's graduating and she would love to get a job here. She has an interview. She made it to the final round and she asked us last night before the 5, do we have any tips? And sometimes that question is too broad. And I think being specific is very important. So to your question about the email subject line, I know how many emails you get a day, 500? It's too many. So you have to find something that is punchy and smart. And he might say, aspiring podcaster, -, inspired by you, ... Now, if it's something like, I would just say for this, like this young woman, okay, if she wanted to initially get an interview and I was referring her there, she might say, referred by Dana Perino -- aspiring podcaster wanting to talk to you. And then I would say, you have to write emails that are readable. And this sounds very technical, but I'm just telling you, this is how you and I would actually look at something. If an email comes and it's this much of dense text, I'm not going to read it. But if it says one line, space, one line, if it's clean. And I also think that we have to respect the fact that people that you're wanting to talk to, they're busy. And so I will tell you one thing that was very inspiring for me that might help your son. About 6 weeks ago, Fox News held something called like a minute mentoring thing, like speed dating, but mentoring for young women. It's something that I started when I left the White House. And basically, it was a group of 6 women, I think, and then they saw 4 different mentors. On the 4th round, when this young woman came, she sat down, she says, hi, I'm Jacqueline. And I was like, oh, you're that girl. So what happened was she was in your son's position last year, trying to find a job, graduated. She wanted to work at Fox News so bad. She just found it really hard to get her foot in the door. She didn't really know anybody. And her aunt, Donna, I think her name was, kind of lives where we live in the Jersey Shore area. And she said, you know, Dana always talks about handwritten notes. Maybe you can write her a letter. And what's the worst that could happen if you try? So I got tears in my eyes talking to this girl because I remember getting this letter. And I was so moved because it was very well written, beautiful penmanship. And it was well written and specific. It included her resume. It was very easy for me to find her email address. Very easy for me to find. So I remember putting it in my backpack. And on Monday when I came in, I said, I think that we should get this young woman's resume and send it to HR. Sent her an email. So can you send me your resume? I got your letter. It was beautiful. And I didn't know she got the job.
Nice.
And so there she is at the mentoring event. And she's telling me, and you don't know what it meant to me. I'm like, if she hadn't taken the chance that her elder, right? Like it could be your aunt, your uncle, your grandma, whoever it might be who gives you like, well, maybe you could try this. You have to ask yourself, what's the worst that could happen if you try? The worst thing would have been if she'd come to my door, knocked on it and been like, hi, I'm barging in here and I'm going to take up all your time. No, she didn't do that. She knew me. How do I like to receive information? And that worked out perfectly. So I think your son is going to be set up for success. It's a little scary to reach out, cold call.
That's fantastic. Yesterday, I was talking with Barbara Corcoran, and she was talking about some mistakes that a lot of entrepreneurs make. And one of them was scaling too quickly, chasing the bright, shiny object, not concentrating on what you're like really good at before you try to do this and this. And I feel like I wonder with you, because you do so much, do you have a kind of formula or a system for yourself to say, okay, I'm ready to take more stuff on? Or is it just a gut feeling that, I could write a book while I'm hosting two shows? How do you do that?
Oh, gosh. I have to over here. I write in the acknowledgments that I'm always like, I have an idea. And thankfully, he's always like, okay, let's hear it. What is it? I do get asked often, like, how do you handle it all? And my days are very full, but my life is full. I feel pretty balanced. I have a very high tolerance for a large workload. I also try to be smart about how I use my time. When I write my books, I do it on the weekends because I don't really have time during the week. I will do research or interviews or, the notes app, the phone. Mine is, there's a lot going on in there. And then I put it all together on the weekend. And I usually have a workout in the morning. I'll do some sort of breakfast with my husband. I'll read the hard copy Wall Street Journal on a Saturday. And then at noon, I'll say, I'll see you in 3 hours. And then I go up and I work. Yeah. And then at 3 o'clock, I'm done. And then we go off and we do something else. So I am very intentional about how I use my time. I definitely can bite off more than I can chew. And I think what Barbara is saying about scaling too quickly is there's something to be said about that. I've also learned how to outsource where I can. So when you reach a certain level of financial success, you can say, what are the things that I want to pay somebody else to do so that I can spend my time either working or doing something to restore myself so I can continue working. So I think about those things. The one thing that you cannot outsource, and there's a whole chapter on this in here, is taking care of your health.
Yeah.
And for me, that is movement. I can get really tight and that can lead to other problems. So taking care of your health is something you cannot outsource. And that means, we all know what that means. It means eating well. It's not a secret. We all know how that works, right? It's like avoiding the process. All of these things, the only thing that you have to do every day for me is to take, I'm responsible. I can't.
So what is one thing, if you remember, maybe one thing that you were like finally able to outsource and you were just like, thank God I never have to do that? Because I always think as I'm unloading the dishwasher, I wish to God I never had to do this again.
The robot. I am so waiting for the robot to fold laundry. I mean, come on. But I also am frugal enough that I will not pay for the laundry, right? I don't have children. I'm not washing diapers. I'm like, that I don't have to do. I will say one thing that combines the two. I pay for private Pilates sessions. And one of the things that does is, one, I like having the one-on-one attention. It makes sure that I am doing it properly. But it also makes sure that I show up because I paid for it. And I have to pay in advance. And if you don't cancel within 48 hours, you pay anyway. So it's one of my pieces of advice, which is to say, if you think that you have a hard time like getting out the front door and to your workout, pay for it. Like that's an investment in your life and your health. And I think it pays dividends in the long run.
One thing that I heard about you maximizing your time is taking a ballroom dancing during lunch break. What's that all about?
Yeah. Okay. So I mentioned Peter and I've been married 28 years, year 26. I said, I can't go to any more of these weddings or events with you without knowing how to dance. And next time you go to a wedding or big birthday party or family reunion, watch the people the couples that are dancing together. They're usually a little bit older. And if they know what they're doing, they're so happy and they stay together. And I've always had like upper back tension. Long story short, I used the Thumbtack app. Yeah. I don't know if you know that one. It's where you put in, I'm looking for lessons or I'm looking for a plumber. And then they send back quotes. And the first person to write back, of course, you're in New York. You can't take dance lessons from Joe Blow. It has to be the rhythm champion of the world, which I didn't even know. But this guy, Misha, and his wife, Dakota, were the first to respond. And I said, hi, we just need 5 lessons. We just want to know how to do 3 dances at social events. And that was in March of 2023. And then I kept going, and Peter and I will take some lessons together, but now I take solo ones, pay for them. And I really love it. It makes me put my phone down for 90 minutes. It is a challenge where I'm trying to figure out, like, am I curious? Can I learn? Can I do this? It's a stretch for me, not just physically in terms of like actually stretching, but I didn't take dance as a kid. I wish I had. And as this book is coming out, when you read an article about anybody, it'll say Dana Perino, comma, age, comma. So I'm reading some of these articles and it's a little bit like, oh, that's right. I am that age. And it's 52, soon to be 53. And I have a lot that I want to do and get done. And so I go to these dance lessons and I'm really, I'm like, oh, there's a whole other hobby here for me. And one of the best things is I have met so many people who have nothing to do with politics or television.
Yeah.
Like going to jury duty. It's the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker. And they're from all over the world, all ages. And there's this one woman, I'm in awe of her. She's 82 years old. She's an excellent dancer. She's been dancing and doing Pilates her whole life. And she's happy and put together and sharp, and her mind is all there. And I'm like, that's awesome. Aspirational to me. So I have really loved it. And here's the other thing I would tell your son.
Yeah.
Who's graduating from college. He should learn how to ballroom dance. You know why?
Right.
All the girls know how. And the guys do not. And this is a great way to meet wonderful women. Do you know who can dance?
Really? Well, I know that. I do know that.
Yeah. And he was the one, when he was in college at Berkeley, he was one of the only people, only guys that knew how to dance. And all the girls would want to dance with him because he could twirl them around the dance floor. That's a good tip. I should put that in the book.
The second edition. Well, it sounds like if the producers of, what's that show called? Dancing with the Stars are listening. I think you just booked yourself a new gig.
Well, that's not a right. show. I would never go on it. But I don't have aspiration to compete that way. But I did. Yeah, I have pushed myself. And my teacher, his name is Misha. His wife's Dakota. They've become like little cousins of ours. They're about to have their first baby. I really love them. And I've learned a lot from them. I get a lot of joy from it. We always have 2 minutes of gossip every day. Also, I love the fact that he became a citizen last year. And Dan, you would have died. I was giving him such a hard time as he was getting ready for his test. I was saying, he talked about balance. You don't want to fall. I said, you don't want to be like Gerald Ford falling on the stairs. I was like, Gerald Ford, like the president? You don't know about that? When you go down the stairs, it could be on your test. That's going to be on my test? I'm like, you never know. It could be on your test. I'm happy to report he got.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great.
It was pretty funny.
So between your job and as you talked about being press secretary, let's talk about nerves for a second. Do you ever get, do you still get nervous when the light's about to go on and you're about to go live? How do you cope with nerves?
So the more you do something, the better it gets. When I first was the press secretary and I had to fill in for Scott McClellan or Tony Snow, like I would have rather died. The first day I ever did America's Newsroom with Bill Hemmer, I walked downstairs and I was so uncomfortable and I couldn't figure out why. And it was because I had put my shoes on the wrong feet. Yeah. So I was nervous. But like now when I go down to do newsroom, and I talk about this in the book, especially for people that have a lot of anxiety, is you have to tell yourself, if you don't have any energy, you can't do anything with it. Without it, you can't do anything. It's pointless. Who's going to want to watch somebody who doesn't have any energy? So what I've tried to do is take any nerves and channel them into preparation, practice, and energy, right? Like being able to present. Most recently, when I was the most nervous, I did this competition with Misha. I went under an alias because I'm not looking to compete, you know, and be anything more than having this as a hobby. But I did think I was going to throw up. Years and years and years ago, when I was 27, we came back from England and I took flute lessons and I just wanted to learn how to play the flute. I always thought it was such a beautiful instrument. And my teacher convinced me to do a recital. And I was like, oh, is that for kids? Like, no, no, it's for everybody. And you're learning so much and it's good to have a goal. So I agreed to do it. And that was at a big church in San Diego. And as I mentioned, I'm 5 feet tall. I was the tallest competitor by far. It was all children. And I said, I will never do this again. It was really mortifying. And I look back on that and think that it had held me back from like trying something new and different. I think about President Bush, like when he left the White House, he started painting and turned out like, wow, he's really good. But to showcase that, you're like, is everyone going to trash this? Is everyone going to hate it? But here's the thing. If I'm not figuring out a way to grow, then...
That's great. And as anyone will say, like, no one cares more about what's going on with you than you. Like, most people will blink and even if you fell on your face, they'll forget it in 2 seconds. So move on.
That's right. Thinking about you and judging you, they're not, because they're only thinking about themselves.
Right,
I'm wondering if you're judging them.
Exactly. All right. We've moved into the big moment, the How Success Happens speed round. I'm going to ask you a couple of quick questions,
okay. And
you're going to answer them, Dana.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so what is a habit you are grateful to have and one you wish you could ditch?
I am very good at waking up and being ready to go immediately. I have no problem. I don't need coffee. I am so excited to wake up every day. A habit that I wish I could break. My phone. I have recently developed an injury with my thumb and it's become a huge problem. It's painful. It's difficult to button my own clothes. And guess what?
Man.
It's from scrolling on my phone. So that's a habit I would like to break. And one of the things I put in the book is I use the tools that social media can give you, which is to put a time limit on your phone.
Oh,
and it really helps.
Okay. All right.
Kind of.
Jeff Bezos sends you an invitation to ride on the next Blue Origin rocket. Your reply?
I will watch from afar and admire, but I have no desire. Hemmer wants to go, though.
Okay.
He would love
Speaking of him, the five goes out for dinner. The check arrives at the table. Who reaches for it?
Okay. Me and Harold.
Does Greg sit on his hands? What? He forgot his wallet? What happened there?
Okay. No, he'll have cash.
Okay. What was your first summer job?
Cool. Babysitting. And then I've had a terrible job. But when I was a little bit older, I did telemarketing. And remember the Nordic Track? They had a product for a while called the Nordic Chair. And it was this piece of equipment that you could put in your living room. And it had these arms that came out from behind. So like you could do like a pulley system. So it was kind of like cold calling, but they had a Nordic Track. And it's just mortifying. It was mortifying, but it's really good money.
Three
times minimum wage, and I only worked like 5 hours a day. Yeah. Terrible, though. I apologize to everybody. Because also it's one of those things where it's a 90-day guarantee.
Oh, that's great. And what is your favorite way to turn off your brain? And I know you're a big reader, so you can't say reading.
That's like taking 80%
You can say whatever you want. This is the speed round.
Time away. But I have incorporated stretching into my life. And there's a great person who I think you would really like. Her name is Hannah Corbin, if you already know her, maybe. Mm. She's from Peloton. And she is a stretch enthusiast and has a lot of videos on that app. And so I've been trying to help this thumb situation. And that's really all of the stretching.
Okay, great. All right, Dana, so awesome reconnecting with you. And congrats on the book. I wish someone had told me. At the time you're listening to this, it is available. So go pick it up. And Dana, where else can people be following you?
I'm on Instagram and X and even TikTok, but Instagram is where I put a lot of my content. And then, of course, Newsroom and The Five and all these books.
All these books. Yeah. All right. Awesome. Thanks so much. Really great talking to you again. And congrats on everything. Ballroom Dancing. I'm going to text him right now.
Talent.
All right, great.
Thanks.
Awesome. Hope to see you again soon. All right, that wraps up another episode of How Success Happens. Thanks so much for listening. If you can stand even more of me in your life, please subscribe to my Substack. This should be fun. I write about embarrassing things in my life that will make you feel much, much better about your life decisions.
And hey, if you're feeling the show, drop us a review, would you? Those old ones are for the other guy, and it'd be cool to get some love for the shiny new host. That's me. And if you are digging this sweet, sweet theme song, please check out more music from Nika RPM over on Bandcamp. Catch you next time.